Welcome to the program A Taste Of. Today we're going to get a taste of Maltese. This is quite quaint when we think about that we are in Malta, but we have with us our lecturer, Godfrey. He's going to look at what it means to be Maltese, and we're going to get a taste of everything typical Maltese. Hi, Godfrey.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, welcome. Godfrey, when I say Maltese, what springs to mind immediately to you?
Malta is situated in between Europe and North Africa, but culturally we are 100% European. The only little bit of change that there is the language which we use. And
because, Godfrey, can I stop you a second? I always think that the Maltese have a typical culture of their own, though.
Well, we can say that, but, you know, I've been just last week I was in Sicily, and you can see many, many traditions which are here being followed here in Malta. For example, even they have the word Vara for the statue that people carry in their processions. And so when you go deep down, you see that many of the Maltese traditions, they have come mostly from Sicily. When it comes to food, when it comes to traditions, especially with regards to religious celebrations, but other events, even carnival. You know? I know that many of my friends, they are going there to Sicily just to enjoy carnival over there. But here in Malta, if we talk about carnival here in Malta, it's really fantastic. You know, we're talking about 400,000 people, a small country where it is just one third of a city abroad, even if you go to Catania. And when we tell them that we are a sovereign nation, we've got our own language, we've got our own culture, our traditions, everything is a little bit different from the others. Of course, we copy things and then they become ours. Even with regards to the words, you know, more than 50% of the Maltese words are loan words. How we call them loan words because they come from Sicilian, from Italian.
Yes, we have the history. We have the history, don't we? That's where they come from.
Yes, that's it. The only change that changed our language was the morphology. Because the morphology is purely Semitic, purely Arabic. But again, we succeeded in changing the Italian and the English verbs into Maltese. For example, the Italians have the verb canta. And cantare in Italian means to sing. And they conjugate canto, canti, canta. In Maltese, we don't say that. We say, incantat, cantai, canta. That is, we take the Semitic morphology and we put it there. Again, with the same with English. They laugh at us when you tell them to park. In English, I park, you park, you parks. In Maltese, it is, niparkia, tiparkia, you parkia. Niparkia, o tiparkia, you parkia.
And that is correct Maltese.
It's even SMS. SMS. They have been accepted because, after all, as Professor Aquilina used to say, it's the people who make the language. So if it is accepted by the people, it is part of the language.
It's a descriptive approach to language, isn't it? It's not one where you're totally puristic about it and you're saying, no, this is the main rules. No, you are seeing how the people evolve and the color of the people.
In fact, the extremes are always bad, no? So usually we don't say, people used to say, we are purists, so we must choose all the words without using an Italian word or an English word. Other people say, no, I use a lot of English, etc. It's the mainstream, and the mainstream is you've got Maltese, which people speak, after all, because
The Maltese are also very artistic.
Yeah, when we come to artistic, whatever, for example, if you take art, if you take music, if you take even cooking, you've got their own specialities.
We are going to listen to some music now.
Yes.
Maybe before we start the music, could you just give us a little overview of what we're going to listen to, Godfrey,
the
today?
The lyrics is by Professor Geoffrey Geary, and the music is by Charles Camilleri, who has just left us. He's one of the best composers we have at the moment.
Okay, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Godfrey, for getting that piece of music in. It was jovial, lyrical. It's called Il Festa, correct?
Yes, Il Festa. In fact, I chose it because you've got bits and pieces from the feast, the Maltese feast.
Which is typical tradition of us.
For example, at the moment in Sicily, they had the Feast of Santa Agata. But you're talking about Catania, where you've got, I don't know how many thousands of people. They've got one feast to celebrate it. Here in Malta, even a small village of 1,000 people, they've got their own fireworks. They've got their own decorations. The churches are not only full of people, but so many gold and silver and decorations and architecture. And it is, you see that it is something which is living.
And it's a love and passion of the village, isn't
Yes, that's it. In fact, when you speak to them, they tell you, well, the church does not belong to the priest. The church belongs to us because we made it. Even when it comes to the feast, you've got the feast, which is the religious feast, which is fantastic. But then you've got the outside activities, where you've got fireworks, where you've got band marches, and they compete. They try to get the best band clubs in Malta. So even though they pay a lot of money, but they, because they want to be better than the others. And perhaps this healthy competition, I remember about 20 years ago, they used to say, well, Maltese feast will disappear gradually. And in fact, it just happened the opposite. Because even you see young people everywhere, they are so enthusiastic about the decorations, the street decorations, for example. You won't see any street decorations like we have here in Malta at the moment.
And even the fireworks display. Yeah,
and the fireworks, well, they are some of the best in the world. No, they won competitions all over the world.
Definitely. What is Maltese? Il Festa is definitely one of them. I agree with you. And that song was very lovely of Charles Camilleri, very lyrical. As a matter of fact, while it's going on, I was hearing that it's got these echoes of other aspects of Maltese in there.
Yeah, well, it's not only the band marches which I mentioned, but even, let's say, the food and the people wearing their best dresses, etc. You've got to remember that the feast was also a social occasion. And if we talk about 80, 90 years ago, most of the girls living in the village, they wanted to meet boys. And so this feast was there to attract the boys to the village. So the girls would wear the best jewelry they have, the best dresses, in order to impress boys, etc. And
is there still an element of that, do you think, Godfrey, or has it died out completely?
Today, before, if you wanted to go to buy a fridge or a washing machine or something, you had to go to Valletta. Today, you can find them everywhere.
Okay.
So today, every village has become a town full of its own. But still, in certain areas, certain villages especially, they've got their own characteristics, which are different from another village. And
considering our limited size, this is quite something, isn't it?
It is quite something. I'm always amazed about how they get all the money to do all these things. But most of the services are gratis. People, they give them because they enjoy doing it.
It's generosity. Maltese are known for the generosity aren't they?
I know, for example, at Balzan, the all the decorations are made free of charge. The banners, the poles, everything, even fireworks, they do them because they enjoy doing it.
For the love of it.
Yeah, for the love of it.
Being a taste of, when I was hearing that program, I heard the word Imaret.
Oh, yeah. Well,
maybe you can explain to us what a little bit of what Imaret
is. Yes. Now, you can find Imaret. If you go to Tunisia, you find something very similar to them. If you go even to Sicily, you find something. They are kind of special pastry. And you've got dates and other things mixed up, but the problem is that they are fried. It is, so when first of all, they are just like biscuits, rhombus in shape. And they are really tasty. In fact, you can smell them from quite far away. And that's the problem, because people suffering from cholesterol and other things, they say, well, oh my God, I would like that. But so you take one, at least, if you're suffering from cholesterol, one you take one a month, you know, but they are so tempting.
Like the ubbite?
And the ubbite, the again, you can find the ubbite in countries.
What is ubbite?
The nougat, you've got the soft one, the white one, you've got the hard one.
And in the feast, they have these traditional stands, don't they, with the wood at the top.
Lauch, yes, because they've got even the stalls there, they are made in such a way that the people are attracted. And, you know, they even leave tiny pieces in front so that you'll taste them. You've got bigger ones as well, but they are pieces of wood, colored like that, so that they won't, if you try to steal it, you just steal a piece of wood, not the nougat.
That is an interesting way of thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's about it. But then, with regards to the everyday life, people take the assatat and the pastitsi, and, you know, and when you said, if we would ask one person to introduce pastitsi in Sicily, he'll become a millionaire, as they made it in New York, in London.
That's right. And the pastitsi are the cheesecakes, aren't they?
Yes, the cheesecakes, ricotta, ESPs, etc. Today, even they've got anchovies ones.
So
that is
typical Maltese. For me, that is so Maltese.
Typical Maltese. And when you go abroad, that's what they ask you. Bring me Maltese bread and pastitsi, because we miss them. So today you can take frozen pastitsi and then
The Maltese bread is good, isn't it?
Yeah, the Maltese bread, I think you won't be able to taste bread as good. It's not because I'm Maltese, but you've got foreigners saying that, well, that is the most delicious thing. And perhaps the best thing is a piece of fresh Maltese bread with tomatoes and olive oil, and perhaps a few capers.
In summer.
You've got the sun-dried tomatoes as well, which we go to that, and the bigilla. So all these are typical.
How would you describe the way of life in Malta, Godfrey?
When you compare it to other countries, it is not a fast life as they have. Although, when I consider life at the moment, and life I lived 40 years ago, it's changed a lot. I remember many, many, many years ago, when I was still a kid, we used to sit, we used to put chairs on the pavement and sit there, all the people talking. Nowadays, you'll have to wait for 10, 20 minutes in order to cross the road, because
it
you've got so
true.
Much traffic. So
it is
traffic.
True. As a matter of fact, you used to see in the village squares the people sitting down.
Yeah, yes, they call the misrach. The misrach comes from the word strich. Strich means to rest. So the misrach is the square where you rest. So you've got all these pensioners smoking and sitting there and talking about everything.
And watching life go by.
And watching life go by. And of course, nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Yes. When we go back to looking at Malta, Malta is not just Malta, it's Gozo, Comino. Do you see a do you distinguish between them when you teach your students? Do you look at it and you describe them as different?
Yeah, they are different, even in the way how they speak. It's so horrible. If you've got, now that's something which is quite curious. People from certain villages in Malta, and even from Gozo, they can speak two Maltese languages. They can speak the dialect one in between, amongst themselves, and the proper one that people talk. So if you hear the Gozitans talking, it is fantastic, because the way they speak is more original than the way we speak today. So they've got more old Maltese words than the Maltese words we are using at the moment.
So it is part of the lexicon which is fading.
Yes, it is part of it has faded from certain cities. For example, if you take Sliema, St. Julian's, etc., Atard, they are fading. More English words are substituting these old Maltese words. But even the way, the intonation, even the vowels, how they say the vowels. First of all, one characteristic is that, for example, you've got the word his in Maltese is tio. So we say tio, 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 tio. All of them means his. And in just a small island where, of course, but with regards to the dialect is only phonetic. We don't have any morphological dialects like the double negative in Cockney, etc.
And if you look at learning Maltese, and you are as a foreigner learning Maltese, what would be the different letters in the alphabet which would be new to you?
Well, there are quite a lot. One which offers quite a bit of a problem is the U. For example, if you say t'i, which means flour, and flour means to make cakes with, it is difficult for some people. And if you take the Maltese of 100 years ago, I would just be reading a book written in 1900. Of course, the Maltese orthography was Italian. So the e was substituted by the k.
Okay.
But today, so the U is difficult. Then you've got one which is quite positive, is you've got the J and the G. The G is the G in God. But the J is the G with the dot on top of it. It replaces the word jar. Okay, so you've got the J and the G. You've got the Z and the T. The T hasn't got a dot on top of it, which is T for T, you uncle. And you've got Z for Zrinch, which means frog. So we've got Z and T. In all, we've got 30 symbols in Maltese, because you've got six vowels, A, E, I, O, U, and I, E.
That doesn't sound too difficult now.
Yeah,
because if you compare it to Arabic, where you've got symbols, then at least we have a script here which we can identify.
Yes. I think one of the best or the most fantastic things which we have in Maltese is it is not the Arabic script, but it is the normal script. So it is, for our students, it is quite easy to be able to write Maltese properly, because at least they don't have to learn a difficult way how to write. You've got the consonants in Arabic. At the beginning it is one thing, in the middle it is another one, at the end it is another one. Here in Maltese it is just. So, with regards to learning Maltese, it is not a simple thing. It is not easy. But the most important thing is exposure. That's what I tell tell my students.
And if you are living here.
Yeah, that's it. So you hear the Maltese thing, even if you're at home. Turn the radio or the television on. Listen to Maltese, even if you don't understand anything. But you're catching certain things. And bit by bit, you learn. You know, I've got a student, an Italian student, who is fantastic. She can keep a conversation in Maltese, and she's been here in Malta for less than a year.
Fantastic!
It's incredible. But when I talk to her, she tells me, "Well, but I do my homework. I study before I sleep. I write and write." She brings me material for me to correct, and any mistake that she makes, why is this? And thank you. And she keeps
it. What would be typical mistakes that we make when you're learning Maltese?
Well, it is that blessed Ein.
Okay, the Ein is the G-H.
The G-H, you know, because the Ein, if it is by itself, it is mute. If it is at the end of the word, it is sounded. If you've got an I after it, it is I. If it is got an O after it, it becomes a U after it, it is O-O.
Definitely complex.
But when you sit it down and you explain it properly, I think it will be understood. Of course, it takes time, and you've got to revise.
Everything in every language, there is always something that causes a little bit more problems. You know, we don't have the things like in German, you have the split infinitive where you have to wait till the next sentence to learn what you've said. I mean, that was my difficulty learning German. So Maltese possibly is more structured.
Yes, The most difficult thing in Maltese are the numbers, because even the Maltese don't know how to say the numbers. And the problem is, for example, in English you say 64. So 64, you've got the 6 and the 4 after it. In Maltese, like German, you've got 4 and 6, 4 and 60. So it is very difficult for them to say Erba City, because in English you think from left to right. In Maltese you've got to think from right to left. So that is coming from the Semitic
background that we have.
Yes, if you ask children, etc., they tell you, they always give the numbers in English. Very, very rarely you've got people who say the numbers in Maltese.
Another question, Godfrey, which is amusing, and I find it something that you think is typical Maltese behavior.
Well, perhaps what I can say is that Maltese developed in the lower classes of the people, because the upper classes they spoke Italian. Today they speak English. So when you had the Maltese, they didn't have those refined words that you've got in other countries. For example, when you speak an Italian and you want to say thank you, etc., you see a lot of here in Malta. It is very simple. Thank you. You can say "Memshim Nish," but how many people say don't mention it? You can thank you.
So it might come across as abrupt, but it's not the people abrupt. The language.
It is the language, and I think that as the time goes by, the language becomes more refined. And I think Maltese is becoming.
Yes, as a matter of fact, you see a lot of literature, Maltese literature, don't you?
Well, if you read Don Carm, if you read.
Don Carm was the national poet.
You see the beauty of the language, the beauty of the words, but it depends upon how much we care ourselves for our language. This happens everywhere. If you go to England, etc. If you go to other countries, you find people who are refined and you enjoy listening to them, other people who are so rough when they talk, etc. It might be English, it might be Italian, it might be Spanish, it might be any language. So if we give more attention to it, and we even the musicality of the word, I think it will help quite a lot.
It is a sense of national pride that we have our own language.
Yes, it is. And at the moment when you've got so many Maltese songs, so many Maltese literature, I think we are making progress all the time.
You mentioned song, and I always think European Song Festival. Yeah, I'm sorry, that's something that just springs to mind, which is, to me, another Maltese, very traditional thing, that in, you get all Europe, they don't give so much attention to the European Song Festival, and then in Malta...
It is something which is almost national, no? People are so crazy about it.
It is us, though. The Maltese are typical passionate people.
Yes, it is. And sometimes you are... Sometimes too much of that. But deep down, when you speak to these people who are so passionate, you see how nice they are. We might be passionate and rough, but when it comes to generosity, I don't think there is any country in the world where they've got so many generous people, so many people who are helpful. Imagine a person, a foreigner, who has got a problem in the street. See how many people they stop to help. You read them in the newspaper. I had this problem, and it's not only they helped me with the car, but they took me home. But it depends upon everybody.
Okay. Thank you, Godfrey. Thank you so much for coming here and joining us today. Well, it is your student, Godfrey. Love you, and I can see why, because you have so much passion for the teaching of Maltese.
Thanks very much.
That was another program, A Taste Of. Thank you for listening to us. That is Michelle Caron at Ingley from the International School of Languages.